The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. 12 minutes after 7, we have a couple of judicial candidates duking it out for position 11 in the Jackson County Circuit Court. And first one to is the incumbent, Judge Matthew Rowan. Morning, Judge. Pleasure having you.
Morning, Bill. Yeah, good morning, Bill. Thank you for having me.
All right. Wanted to find out, we're just going to dig right in, and I'm going to try to ask similar questions to both candidates. We're going to talk to everyone today about this. And first off, you've been on this, on the job here for about 2 months at this point. What is your overall legal experience and kind of your bio prior to this?
Well, prior to this, I was an attorney practicing in the Rogue Valley for about 14 years. So in my practice, primarily emphasized civil litigation in the beginning of my career, and then towards the end, I became half civil litigation and criminal defense. Mm-hmm. And I took a brief span of time in there, and I was corporate counsel at Lithia Motors for about 3 years.
So, Judge, how long were you a criminal defense attorney? How long was that?
So I did criminal defense. I was at the public defenders a long time ago, I think, about it, and in my initial stint, I was there for a year and a half, and then I started my own business. So I started my own law firm, and while I was doing my own business, a portion of my practice was criminal defense work.
Okay, very good. And so, and prior to that, now were you most recently corporate attorney at Lithia?
So I was corporate counsel at Lithia Motors from 2014 until 2018, when okay. I started my own law firm with my who is Judge Collins, Sarah Collins.
Got it. Okay. All right. Now, I just wanted to get clear on that. How would you contrast your judicial experience and temperament with that of your opponent in this election?
Well, I don't know. My opponent doesn't have any judicial experience, so that's but I will say my temperament is I try to be fair and impartial, and I really emphasize being transparent in the rulings that I make. I think that's what I noticed what was needed on the bench, and I try to bring that to the bench because I think transparency in the decision-making process is how you get buy-in from the litigants, even those that lose, and it instills a feeling of fairness and equity in the court system, and especially neutrality.
Why did you want to become a judge?
Well, I think I've always wanted to become a judge. My desire to become a judge increased over time. It's really a commitment to serving the community that I live in. I've always tried to have some portion of my work be pro bono work or community service related. I'd say that even before I was a lawyer, I was a teacher. So I always kind of had that baked into me, this desire to help the community. My parents were both teachers, and they taught me from a very early age that it's important to give back to your community and really work to build the community up.
So you look at being a judge then as kind of a position of service of sorts.
Absolutely. And that's the complete reason of why I elected to close down my law practice and go this route.
What could you do to reduce the backlog? There's been a lot of conversation. I know that even just the creation of this particular position was done because of backlogs in the courts here in Southern Oregon. But what else could be done? I'm speaking about matters such as, defense attorney availability, those sort of things. Is there anything that a sitting judge can do about that?
Well, there's actually a pretty comprehensive plan that we put together. And I say we, when this new position was created and also when we've been concurrently dealing with the public defense crisis, the legislature tasked each judiciary, each division, to put together a plan for tackling the public defense crisis. And Presiding Judge Bloom was in charge of that. And while I was an attorney, I was tapped to be a part of the team that helped put our opinions in towards creating that plan. So I'm intimately familiar with it. And it really begins with first increasing funding. And again, that's not really what the judicial branch judges don't do that, mm-hmm. but that funding has come through. So now it's really attracting talent to the Valley, and talent meaning attorneys. I will say, as a side note, you know, the public defense crisis is one thing, but Medford generally is losing attorneys. Attorneys are retiring, and we're not getting the talent in the Valley. So even separate and apart from the public defense crisis, we have, in family law cases, we have individuals who are waiting 2 to 3 months just to get in to see a lawyer to make an appointment. So it's a universal problem. So what can the court do to fix that? Well, I've put forward a couple ideas. One of the ideas, I think what our court can do, we would have to get funding to do it, is to actually start up a law clerkship program where we actually have clerks that have graduated from law school who come down and clerk for judges. I think that could provide a benefit in that clerkships are pretty prestigious positions. And if you have those positions, you can attract young, you know, invigorated attorneys who come down here, want to put in work, and then they develop ties to the community.
So it's kind of an apprenticeship program, good experience then, if you're wishing
right.
to enter this. Okay, yeah.
And boy, it's really needed. We need attorneys in the Valley badly. And Medford is a great place to live. That message just needs to get out to the law schools who happen to all be up north.
Is the problem the hourly rate that is typically given to a defense attorney or a public defender, as the case might be? Is this the main reason, or is there another aspect that might be driving this, you think?
Well, the crisis really started when the public defense services shifted how they paid attorneys. So I won't get into the minutia of it, but once that shift occurred, it created ethical constraints on how many cases a public defense attorney could take. So what would happen and what is happening is attorneys are capping off their caseload once they've reached those ethical limits. And now you have this backlog. I liken it to a bathtub, right? You have this bathtub full of individuals waiting for an attorney, and the spigot's still running, but the drain stops. So that's really the crux of the crisis, and we're still figuring out how to work through that. As to the funding, they're not paid on an hourly basis, but the legislature has approved increased funding, and public defense service providers are being paid more than they were in the past. And the trend looks to be promising in that it's going to be continuing.
Yeah, Judge, you just mentioned something I didn't realize. So they don't pay by the hour? I can't imagine anybody who's doing this kind of work would just want a flat fee. Is it a flat fee kind of system right now?
Before, let's say in 2018, you're paid by case. So like a misdemeanor would pay $300. So and that would be a complex DUI. You took that case, and no matter how much work you put in it, that's how much you got paid. And the criticism of that system is it encouraged attorneys who were unethical, so they thought. I mean, there's a big study on it, to basically churn through their clients without care for the quality of legal representation that was provided. So they switched to a model where you're basically paid like it's not a salary, because the state doesn't want to call them. State doesn't want to call these attorneys employees because, for whatever reason. But they're basically paid a salary based on a full time equivalency.
Okay.
So that's how the current model is set up. There's currently discussions about whether that model is effective, because that current model is what has created the public defense crisis. And whether or not there should be a shift to an hourly model and what that rate should be. I will say that the rate that the federal government pays for public defense providers, because they do pay on an hourly rate, was about $150 an hour, is my understanding.
That in the legal world, nobody gets rich on that, right? By the time you pay for an office and staff and everything else that goes with it? Am I wrong?
No, that's correct. It's difficult. There's a lot of overhead for an attorney. I mean, there's a lot of overhead for running a business generally, regardless if you're an attorney or not. It's difficult to run a lean law firm with legal staff that can help you, adequate legal staff, especially when contracts like the Oregon State contract with the public defense providers require or impose requirements that attorneys that have a contract meet certain legal staff requirements. So it kind of hems you in on what your expenses are. And so it makes things difficult, I'm not going to lie.
Judge Matthew Rowan with me, and he is running for re-election, position 11 in the circuit court, been there a couple of months here, and you can find out more. Website is Rowan, R-O-W-A-N, for judge.com. Just want to make sure people know who we're talking to. What is your judicial opinion here, Judge, of the reforms that have been put in place by Measure 110? I know that we have just really started getting into the reforms now, but do you think that it is enough? Why not? Maybe you can give me your overall hot take, so to speak.
I'm happy to give you my hot take. I won't get too detailed because I have to be careful about rendering legal decisions, legal opinions. But
sure.
I do think that the reversal of Measure 110 was needed. How that's going to play out over time remains to be seen. And the reason for that is we're dealing with this public defense crisis. So now that drugs have, in some sense, been recriminalized, that's going to create an increased burden on case flow in the court system. More people are going to need attorneys, and it's unclear whether those needs can be satisfied and how that's going to play out as I said before, the bathtub of sort of fills up with individuals who need counsel. Right now, I will say that before that even 110 was reversed, there was already over 800 individuals charged with crimes in Jackson County that were awaiting counsel, right? And the Constitution requires you to have a fast and speedy trial. So there was already a sort of a constitutional crisis. My concern, to the extent that there is a concern, is that that crisis will be exacerbated. That's not to say that the drugs shouldn't be recriminalized, but I will say the first week I was on the job, I was the duty judge, and I was the duty judge when the laws changed and drugs became recriminalized. And the very first night, there were already two individuals who were lodged and in jail. So extrapolate that over time, you're talking about a lot of people who need attorneys.
Boy, 800 case backlog. That's astounding. I didn't realize the numbers were that large. But you were talking about the Constitution a moment ago, and I'm going to shift to that here. What is your opinion towards the fully informed jury movement in today's society? In other words, the juror's right to refuse to enforce an unjust law, judging not just the crime, but the law itself. Any opinion on that?
Well, I don't know. I will say it's interesting. It's also known as jury nullification, what you're talking about. That's
right.
the common term, right? Oregon's constitution actually has a clause that seems to suggest that jurors can decide both the law or the facts and the law. Which suggests that there is some jury nullification baked into Oregon's own constitution, which is interesting to me. And I will say, when I was a defense attorney, I would always argue for that. I will say,
sure,
that,
you'd love to have juror that says, "Hey, I think this law is unjust." I get that, right? But it could be considered a bulwark rather against a bad law too. Another way of looking at that.
I think the other side of that, though, is, right, there's the legislative process, there's the initiative and referendum process. Those are the processes by which we change the laws. Jurors and judges, we also don't like judges to legislate from the bench. Mm-hmm. Or there is that criticism out there, right? There's separate paths that laws are changed by. And the question is whether that should be done through the judicial system. I believe the current state of law, notwithstanding what's in the Oregon Constitution and how judges always operate, at least in the courtroom here, is, we instruct as to what the law is, you apply the facts to the law. Now, what occurs in the jury deliberation room, nobody knows. And, so it's ultimately up to the jurors at the end of the day whether they're going to render a guilty or not guilty verdict or award damages in a civil liability case.
What has been the biggest criticism? I don't know if you want to call it a criticism or disappointment in interactions with the judicial system in your experience. And what could be done to remedy it? What would you suggest? Let's say, in your perfect world, in your perfect judicial world, maybe kind of a weird question, but it's sort of open-ended.
Well, I think the general criticism that I hear from other, you know, people in the community is it's the delay. There's the time to justice, right? And that really comes up in the criminal justice system for victims seeking, you know, to get some remedy to, for what they're feeling. And that problem is also definitely being felt in the civil case. And frankly, that's why they added a new judicial seat in Jackson County. You know, there was a study that was done that said Jackson County is actually short 4 judicial seats. And the legislature approved 1. So we did get a new seat, and that's the seat that I'm currently filling. But it really is the time to justice is the criticism that we're feeling. And how can the courts remedy that? Well, we can do what we're doing. We can add more judges. We can work to create more efficiencies on the bench. I know our current bench is working on that and trying to look at every possible way to increase efficiencies so cases get to trial faster.
Judge, something that I ask every judicial candidate when I get the opportunity is, how will you, when the time comes to leave the position, how will you leave the position? Will you serve your term?
My intent is to serve my term and to serve it out. That has always been my intention. Now, of course, I'm hoping to be on the bench for a long time, and I hope, you know, God willing, I don't get sick or have any condition that requires me to leave. But my intention is to run for election multiple times, hopefully retain my position, and, you know, serve out my term to the finality.
Judge Matthew Rowan, and you can find out more, rowanforjudge.com, rowanforjudge.com. Judge, I appreciate you taking a few minutes to talk. No, you got to get to the day job right now. You be well, okay? Thank you.
Thank you.
It is 728. This is KMED 99.3 KBXG. You're waking up with the Bill Meyer Show.
We're here, Realty. This is News Talk 106.3 KMED, and you're waking up with the Bill Meyer Show.
7:30, we'll catch up with the rest of the news here. Secretary of State candidate Dennis Linthicum will join me. We'll dig more into election integrity, the issue which just keeps on giving. The gift which keeps on giving, for sure. All right. Hello, Steve. Wild Sam and Steve on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. What is going on in the medical world, huh? What's happening?
I don't know. I just got a text message yesterday from the surgery center saying that they don't have any injectable anesthesia.
Okay. Now, we're talking about Southern Oregon with, you know, we got, what, 250,000, 300,000 people in the two-county area here, probably even more than that, 220,000. Yeah, about more than 300,000 people, and we're out of injectable anesthesia.
That's what they told me. I don't know. I haven't talked to anybody. I had an epidural. I have old back that's got issues 3 months ago, and I put in to have another one. And
yeah.
I was waiting to get approval. Then I get this message saying they don't have any anesthesia. They can give you nitrous oxide, but they don't have any injectable.
Oh, I like nitrous. I mean, that's, well, you know, the thing about nitrous, if you were to take nitrous, you still feel the pain, but you don't care.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. All right. I've just had it a few times on dental procedures, but in all seriousness, you know, that's, I wonder if there is anybody else, if it's just this particular surgery center. I mean, I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus here, but couldn't you, like, go to Providence or go to Asante and ask? Or could it,
The text message said it was caused by the hurricane, and I think it was the delay from the strike on the East Coast.
Oh.
But I deleted it. It made me mad, so I deleted it. I wished I kept it so I could have read it to you. But it said basically the hurricanes are causing this, and I don't know exactly how that would be, but maybe it's port problems or something.
I would be...
Crazy world.
Well, I think it's even crazy if there is just only one place that you can get this injectable. What's the drug manufacturer, did they say, or not?
No, they didn't say. Well, it's the newer form of lidocaine hydrochloride. I don't know who makes it.
Oh, okay. Well,
but they've improved it a lot. It doesn't last as long as it used to. You know, it wears off quicker, which is a good thing because you don't end up with a numb mouth for a week or something afterwards.
But still, that's very interesting. You wouldn't think that something which is of such import. I mean, this is one of the medical basics in the world.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Any kind of surgery that you're going to have, whether it's just minor, you know, repair something, a cut in your skin, or anything like that.
Well, you know, we could always go down on the Greenway, find a little fentanyl here and there. Maybe that could do a little pinch hit.
Yeah, you can roll the dice.
Yeah, all right. Steve, sorry about your trouble, but interesting that we would have a shortage here in Southern Oregon of something. I mean, yeah, I'm sure there's hurricanes. Yeah, there's a dock workers thing, but I guess this is what happens when you are dependent on not making it here. I think that's really the bottom line. I appreciate your call. It's 7:34. We'll catch up on the rest of the news.
The new Jackson County Circuit Court judge position needs a new kind of judge. The Oregon Legislature's creation of a new Jackson County judge position opens the door for change. Johan Pietila possesses the temperament, experience, and dedication needed to be that judge for Jackson County. He brings a hands-on approach and the experience to help solve major issues. You can expect transparency, fairness, and respect in Johan's courtroom.
I'm Johan Pietila. In a courtroom, everyone deserves a fair chance to be heard. My commitment to procedural justice means neutrality, respect, and trust will guide every decision in my courtroom. As Circuit Court Judge, I will continue to demonstrate my dedication to the citizens of Jackson County and would be humbled to have your vote.
Vote Johan Pietila, paid for by the committee to elect Johan Pietila for Jackson County Circuit Court Judge. Learn more at pietilaforjudge.org.
News brought to you by Millett Construction, specializing in foundation repair and replacement. Get on solid ground. Visit MilletteConstruction.com.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's
with Father and Son Dorian. I'm on KMED.
7:39, and joining us on KMED and 99.3 KBXG, Secretary of State candidate, the GOP, Dennis Linthicum. Hello, Dennis. I like Dennis.com, by the way, the website. Welcome back.
Good morning, Bill. It's good to be here this morning. You've had interesting conversations this morning, and it's always fun to get my chance, but it's been a long time since I've been on Conspiracy Theory Thursday.
Yeah, it has been a while, but, you know, it just happens to be the day of the week that everyone's just, you know, plopping in on. And besides, the ballots have dropped, and so, you know, this is one of those things that... You know, we're getting down to brass tacks here over the next couple of weeks. We are now entering voting season. Now, I wish we didn't have a voting season. I wish we just had a voting day, but we can't fix all of the problems that we have here. But now, as Secretary of State, you have been campaigning on voter integrity and voting integrity now for several months now. You have been talking about these issues, and yet. My concern, though, quite often, is that we still have problems with voter turnout. And, you know, you hear about people who say, well, you know, it's Oregon. It's not even worth, trying to vote for. I mean, look at what's been going on with the Secretary of State's office, currently inhabited, the way it's been working right now. Oh, we're really sorry. Oh, we've got all sorts of clerical issues that are going on. Oh, the DMV falls on its sword. But ultimately, nobody has to prove anything in this state. So what would you say to those that are saying that it doesn't matter? What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. It's problematic. One, I feel it's my responsibility to inform people who set the chessboard, because somebody set the chessboard and we're playing on it like this is the board we have to play.
Yeah.
And in some ways it is. But we have the opportunity to rewrite the rules of the game. And so Republicans need to turn out in droves. We need every Republican to come out and vote, because this is where we get to, quote, rewrite the rules of the game. For example, one of the first rules I would get rid of would be the privacy rule, where the estimate for us in a Freedom of Information request was $987,000, as close to $1 million as you can get. $1 million to see records that are required to be saved at the county level for 2 years.
Yeah, these are the actual ballots from an election that you and Senator State Senator Kim Thatcher, he wanted to take a look at and examine for voting auditing purposes. And, you know, who can afford to pay a county almost $1 million to look over this stuff?
It's, right.
It's stuff that gets locked away.
And then the response is, well, since you never got to look at the crime, the response is, well, you're an election denier.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know, this is a you don't have the evidence. There's no widespread evidence of fraud. Right. I don't have the evidence because nobody allowed us to review the source data.
Yeah, because you'd have to be a millionaire or have just $1 million sloshing around your account to be able to look at it. And I don't think now, I don't know. Maybe the people that wrote the election rules, mostly the controlling Democratic Party in Oregon, maybe that's considered not a bug, but a feature. That nobody can really afford to look at elections. And it used to be routine that you just go down, pick up a CD or thumb drive of what was of the ballot images. And that's all there was to it. Wasn't there? Wasn't that the way it was?
That's why this is such an important race. And this is why I need every Republican, every independent, every non-affiliated who believes in election integrity. In fact, every Democrat who believes in election integrity should be voting for Dennis Linthicum for Secretary of State, because I could rewrite that rule. Because that's not legislature. That's not the legislature. That's a rule from the Secretary of State.
That was strictly an administrative rule. In other words, this was a choice that the Secretary of State's office made. It wasn't a law.
This was done purposefully to inhibit investigation. And then they get to say with proud faces, you are an election denier, and there is no evidence. It's like, well, there is evidence if only we could see behind the black curtain.
So we're going to make sure and write rules so that you couldn't see it. Yeah, and that's what happened here. And you're right. You're relitigating what happened a couple of years ago for sure. But it's for a point. It's for a point for sure. And this is what having a good secretary, the difference between a good Secretary of State and a party hack Secretary of State, in essence. Isn't that really what we're talking about?
That's right. That's exactly right. There were 458,000 registered Republicans who did not vote in Oregon's primary election. That's a 500,000 people.
Man.
That could have voted in the primary that chose not to vote in the primary. These are the people that I need to encourage to get out and fill out their ballot, not because we don't have a chance, but because we have the opportunity to rewrite the rules.
You know something, Dennis? I know you're a person of faith. You and your wife are people of faith, okay? What has concerned me is a growing... I don't know if it's a growing trend, but I've certainly known a number of Christian conservatives, Christian Republicans, who would look at this being a presidential election cycle, and they would say, I don't like either of those candidates, so I'm not going to vote. And I'm wondering if that's a danger that we're looking at in the down ballot. And this is why you're fighting for the turnout aspect of it right now. And by the way, if you're a Christian conservative, you just don't want to vote because you don't like Trump or Harris, fine. But there's a lot more on that ballot, and someone's going to win these races with these votes. What do you think about that all?
Yeah, I think that's the key here is someone's going to win. And for you to say, I don't care who wins is really, the ostrich with their head in the sand, because you're going to care as soon as the Harris-Walz team takes over the White House. It is going to be a big, big deal because what would happen to Elon Musk and all his efforts? Yesterday, there was a news article that said the California Coastal Commission wouldn't let him launch rockets anymore.
And they specifically targeted him for his political beliefs because he's supporting President Trump.
That's right? Exactly right. They didn't say because it hurts our coastal migratory birds. They didn't say because it damages the ozone layer. They didn't have any scientific reason for denying him those launch permission. They only denied him because of his perspective. And then on the interview that you had this morning, where you shared a little bit of the Bret Baier interview with Kamala Harris, she says Trump is a danger to our nation and to our foundational Republican values as a majority rule kind of jurisdictionally appropriated nation.
Yeah, and, yeah. Let me play a little bit of that. No, I can't play that for you right now. I just realized you're on the Skype, so I can't play the computer and you at the same time. But yeah, you're right though. It's like the politicization of it all, of the entire system, including the politicization of election integrity in this state too. These are the battles that you fight. You are one of those warriors.
Why it's so important for the Christian community and the Republicans and the NAVs who live conservatively or understand, you know, economic reality, that they get out and vote even though they don't feel like it. They have to put their name on a ballot and turn it in, because the left will create impetus for collecting ballots, harvesting, which is legal in Oregon, and they'll turn all those in. And we rely, because we value the individual and not the group, we rely on the individual. So this means every individual has to make up his own mind to turn in his ballot. And it's important that we stress this over and over and over again. We believe in the individual. The Democrat Party believes in the collective and the group identity. And that's where their power comes from, is those false categories of human beings. Stink, we're human beings. As you had a conversation with somebody about, you know, answering a questionnaire. What race are you? I'm a human racer, thank you.
Yeah, well, exactly. We need to erase the human race from a lot of people on that side of the aisle, I guess. The thing is that the beauty of having you as Secretary of State is that this would be a counterbalance and just balancing the scales to the current, and it is a democratically controlled board that the state of Oregon has run. You would be a fair, honest, and, you know, you wouldn't be putting a thumb on the scale for Republicans. That's not what you would be doing. I know you, because you are a man of great integrity.
First of all, you can't put the thumb on, because the entire machine is a Democrat machine. The only thing you can do is make them walk straighter and taller.
Exactly.
And be more forthright, because right now they're fabulous at twisting words and obfuscating facts and hiding details and redacting documents. And we would have somebody who could, you know, muster a little bit of pushback against that. I think Will Lathrop would also be good in the AG's office, and Brian Boquist in the Treasurer. The three of us as executive officers, this rarely happens, by the way, to have three of us as Republicans in the executive office branch at the state of Oregon level is really an important thing for Oregonians, specifically in all the eastern counties and rural areas where you're not quite confused yet about why you married your wife or why your wife married you. I mean, this is common sense stuff, and we need people to get out the vote.
All right. Very good. I appreciate that. You know, Dennis, I wonder if any area of the country that just tends to have monoparty or uniparty rule, you know, like Oregon, ends up having the same sort of situation. I don't want to cast aspersions about everyone's motivation within the Democratic Party, although they are, as a rule, much, much more collectivist than the Republican Party is. But yet, I could see this situation where maybe if we were living in Texas and we were talking, we'd be talking about Republicans that have their thumb on the scale on everything and controlling everything. Maybe we'd be doing the same thing there. I don't know. I just wonder if it's just what naturally happens in human events when you have people with big control, and they've had big control for a lot of years.
Right, and you're absolutely right. This is Lord Acton's famous saying: "Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely." So it can happen on either side of the street. There's no difference there. We're humans. We're failed human beings. We have this desire. We're greedy. We're selfish. Yeah. And to counteract that, we need competition. This is why the school system is so mucked up, is because we don't have free and open, fair competition between school districts, schools, private schools, home schools, or parochial schools. There's a one-size-fits-all mentality. That's why COVID was such a mess. And the one-size-fits-all mentality and the captured market, whether it's a medical market, the legal market, the education industrial complex, all of these areas are essentially captured because there's so much money and power in government. Government is the wellspring of all the money and power and corruption you could ever want in your life.
I would dare say that at this point, government is also the stock market right now, too. I know we keep talking about, oh, capitalism. No, not when you have the most important price of all, the price of credit and money, determined by the government. But
we can't even get into that this morning. But we could spend your entire morning show from when the alarm first goes off. We could be talking about the monetary impact of the Fed.
Yeah, but we're not going to do that right now, Dennis. We're not going to go there. We can't go there. We don't have the time. But the point being, though, another day, we'll have perhaps that conversation. But think about it this way. You elect Dennis Linthicum as a Secretary of State, and not only will elections be more fair and just being an honest broker about this, he'll actually have the Democrats behave better, too, because they'll have to follow the rules. And I think that would be a way of looking at it. We'll help them help themselves. How about that, Dennis? What do you think?
That should have been my calling card. Help the Democrats. Vote Linthicum.
Help the Democrats be actual honest Democrats. I like that. Dennis, pleasure as always. ElectDennis.com to find out more about this. And interesting times here. We'll talk soon, all right? Be well.
Okay. Thanks for the morning. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Dennis. It's 7:54. This is KMED 99.3 KBXG. You're on the Bill Meyer Show.
The grilled super turkey sandwich is so popular, it has its own Twitter account.
6 to 8 on KMED. This is the Bill Meyer Show on 106.3 KMED. Got something on your mind? Give Bill a shout at 541-770-5633. 770-KMED.
Kamala and Brett Baer.
Frankly, exhausted of Brett.
More than 70% of people tell the country is on the wrong track. They say the country is on the wrong track. If it's on the wrong track, that track follows 3.5 years of you being vice president and President Biden being president. That is what they're saying, 79% of them. Why are they saying that? If you're turning the page, you've been in office for 3.5 years.
And Donald Trump has been running for office.
But you've been the person holding the office.
Come on. Madam Vice President. You and I both know what I'm talking about. You and I both know what I'm talking about.
I actually don't. What are you talking about?
What I'm talking about is that over the last decade,
people have become. But you're
the lever of power. But listen, over the last decade, it is clear to me, and certainly the Republicans who are on stage with me.
Okay, yeah, it's certainly. In other words, what she would not say is that someone is questioning the Uniblob. Someone, how dare they question the international rules-based order with essentially globalist leftists in charge? Yeah, including you too, Liz Cheney. I don't know. It's amazing. All right. Shade before 8. Hey, Matt, how you doing this morning? Conspiracy Theory Thursday. What's on your mind, huh?
Well, another one of my conspiracies coming true.
Oh, so no. Which one this time?
In this one, I commented. And actually, I sent this off to a black activist. This guy's been around since.
Hey, could you rearrange your phone? You're just a little off mic on this.
Is that any better?
Oh, yeah, much better. Yeah.
Oh, okay, good. So I had actually sent this off to a few people.
Okay, try it again. Now you're off mic again. All right?
Okay. I'm kind of assuming that might be playing into it here. But anyway, I've made the comment that even if the illegals don't vote in this election or any other election, they're still going to get the count in the census. And I made the three-fifths argument, and that was the big three-fifths compromise for ratifying the Constitution, was saying you can't use your slaves as voters in regards to the, you know, counting the census.
Yeah, and that it was about apportionment, apportioning representation, and they would use three-fifths of a slave. And it's not that they were three-fifths human. It was just used they weren't technically citizens at that point in time, right?
Yeah, well, you know, this is the same thing. But I'm looking at an article from Breitbart, and it says, Donald Trump, Democrats' migration plans threaten black political power. And that's what I sent out to some of these black activist guys I speak to from back east. And I just said, do black Americans, do they understand what's happening here? That they are about to lose all of their political pull. And then finally, Trump is talking about it. So I don't know if I sent it to Lars and then he passed it on. But this is an argument that Trump is now making, and it's the right argument that black people need to say, well, wait a minute, hang on. It's not just that they're taking all of our money. You know, we don't get the rec centers and all the other services yeah. that we want. They're taking all the housing. They're going to take our political power. Imagine the neglect black communities have felt for 50 years, where they're just, they scream and yell every 4 years, every 2 years, and Democrats come in and say, okay, yeah, we'll do this.
And even then, Democrats would more or less do what it takes to placate them, ultimately, and keep them on the Democratic plantation, you know, a different kind of plantation, as has been, you know, joked about, not really funny, ha-ha, for a number of years. But now the idea is that, blacks aren't reliable enough maybe for us, and we're kind of losing the hold because we're getting all tranny, and a lot of those, a lot of tranny and LGBTQ and a lot of that in the black church doesn't really go over all that well. Fair enough, right? You know, what could be going on?
That's right. I just wonder if enough of them are going to figure this out in time, because if they don't, they are going to lose political power.
In other words, political power gets diluted. That's what the chaotic open border is all about. Your regular native-born voters, well, they're not pliable enough right now. They're not voting the right way. So you need to import different people now.
That's right. Hmm. Now, I had one more comment I wanted to make. Remember when Barack Obama was recently scolding black men?
Yeah.
Okay. You know how sometimes you really want to say something and you know you can't say it because you're on the air and you're not allowed to use that language?
Happens all the time, yes.
Barack Obama, the reason he was getting so upset at the brothers, as he said, is because he really wants to tell them, look, you idiot, I'm running the show. I can't say that. Okay, I'm just telling you, you need to vote for her. But just know that you're voting for me. I don't know why you're not getting there, but I can't come out and say it. Because then people will say, oh, well, we don't want more Barack Obama, so we're not going to vote for her. I think that's the reason he was so upset, because he's dying to tell them that they're voting for him.
Well, he is a Leo, so there's a lot of ego there, okay? You know? And it's like, this is, you know, you think you're voting for her, you're voting for me. Going to talk about me, going to talk about I, going to talk about number one, me, mine, my. Or whatever, you know.
Well, that's enough about me. Let's talk about you. What do you think about me?
Yeah. Well, I think you're great. What about you?
Yeah.
All right. Now, in all seriousness, though, and by the way, apologies to the late Toby Keith. I miss him all the time. But anyway, thank you, Matt. Good call on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Let me grab out all the water here before news. Hi, who's this? Good morning. Welcome.
Yeah, Thomas.
Hello, Thomas.
I wanted to suggest that people learn from Donald Trump, that he had challenged and got a hold of Thomas Jefferson. And Thomas Jefferson said that there seems to be a misconnection here, that the FEMA camps are not for the people. They're for the government agents who violate their oath of office and also the people's rights and property, and that the people would be the guards at the FEMA camps for these government persons who violate the oath of office.
You know, that would be a wonderful stick rather than a carrot. In other words, here's a stick. In other words, stop being a tyrant, and then we won't put you in your own FEMA camp. All right.
Well, they've already violated their oath many times, and they've also need to go to prison in order to serve the time that their oath violates.
All right. Is there a specified penalty for violating the oath, though? I'm not aware of that.
They used to have a rope and a tree and or something of that nature.
Oh, that was just taking you out of commission. Yeah, just getting you off of the planet. And let, in other words, kill them all, let God judge them, right?
Well, actually, the Founding Fathers put it in the Declaration of Independence as to what the responsibility of the people is.
Yeah, well, you know how it goes, though, these days. Do you think you know, that's an interesting question, Thomas, otherwise Ron. Do you think that Founding Fathers today would be able to pull off what they did in the 1700s in today's America, assuming that the idea was to rebel against the tyrant king of America that is, you know, taking way more money than the King of England ever did from them?
I don't know, but I do think this. People who believe that they would meet up in the private citizens who would meet up in the FEMA camp, have a confusion in that they should be looking at putting those in government who are in violation of the people's rights and property there instead of themselves.
Oh, okay. All right. So let's put you – now, since you're going to be in the FEMA camp with me and along with Lynn and all these other folks, we're all going to be FEMA camp buddies, okay? What do you want to be in charge of?
I'm not in the FEMA camp. You can be there if you want, but not me.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, see, there you go. Good. So you will be the Wolverine out there in the hills, right?
Well, you yourself could be the Wolverine, as could Lynn or any of the others out there who say they're going to meet up with you at the FEMA camp.
No, we're having fun. We're having a little bit of humor on this one it's like gallows humor here. All right, I'm going to put you in charge of food. You're going to be in charge of food prep, okay? You'll be a sous chef in the camp. All right. Thanks. Thank you, Thomas, Ron, whoever you are. 6 after 8, KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass. We'll catch up on the rest of the news here. Johan Pietila, running for Jackson County Circuit Court Judge, Position 11. We'll get his take on the issues coming up.
The People's Commissioner. Hi, this is...